The Gaza ceasefire is still holding for one more week, but the IDF is assessing new military options on dealing with Gaza. The U.S. is sending some weird mixed signals to Iran. The peace negotiations for Ukraine-Russia war are about to begin next week. Messianic World Update begins now. Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion and Lamb Ministries. Welcome to another edition of Messianic World Update. Today's date is Friday, February 14th of the year 2025. And here's the news for this week. Last weekend, in fact, it was last Sunday, Hamas all of a sudden announced there would be no more hostages to be released. They claimed that Israel had broken the ceasefire agreement. Well, there was quite outrage immediately from the U.S. side and from Israel. It was a shocking announcement for Hamas to make. Trump announced that all hostages had to be released this Saturday or else all hell would have to pay. He did modify that slightly and said, well, it's up to Israel and Netanyahu as to what they're going to do. In the course of the discussion that immediately followed, there was this whirlwind of negotiations, and there was a discussion about our hostages have to be released, 9 hostages have to be released. And along with that, Netanyahu, to put a little pressure on Hamas, called up new IDF elements, told them to get ready to go into Gaza and carry out new combat missions. Furious negotiations took place, and finally Hamas came back and said, okay, we'll release 3 and hold to the agreement. So we have the names of the 3 that are supposed to be released, and tomorrow 3 more hostages are going to be released, 3 men. What was the hangup? What happened? Well, it turns out it has to do with the subject of some mobile homes and heavy equipment that Hamas was expecting it was going to come into the Gaza Strip. And the way we've been able to piece this together is Egypt, who's been one of the negotiators, the contact to Hamas on behalf of Israel and Qatar, apparently to sweeten the deal to get Hamas to agree to this whole ceasefire agreement, said that that Israel would be supplying mobile homes and heavy equipment like bulldozers to help clear rubble and to be able to give something better than tents to the Palestinians for them to dwell in. There is a tremendous need for shelter for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Some more than 77,000 tents have been delivered. There's really a need of around 200,000 tents. But Hamas had argued, no, we want some mobile homes. Well, Egypt told Hamas, yes, there would be mobile homes and heavy equipment that Israel had agreed to that. Well, when that subject came up, Israel says, I don't know what you're talking about. We never agreed to any of that. We agreed to supply tents and humanitarian aid. And it turns out that it was Egypt and the Arabs, you know, lying to the Arabs, namely Hamas, to try to get them to agree. And this is one of the problems with Arab negotiations. Well, after they straightened it all out and figured out, well, what actually happened, Hamas had no choice but to go with the original ceasefire. That's the reason why they made the announcement. So this weekend, we're getting 3 more hostages, and the ceasefire is holding at the moment. Now, I mentioned the 3 hostages coming to us as 3 men, but the big question is, what about the Bibas mother and her 2 children? That subject has been coming up all week long as a result of that, and we still don't know the fate of her and those 2 children. Those 3 hostages are being released. They were all kidnapped from kibbutz near Oz, and that's up there, one of those things that was attacked on October 7th. This week, also adding to the consternation you could see within Hamas and in the Gaza, how confusing it was, some Hamas guy decided to launch one of his rockets he still had left, and he launched it from Gaza toward Israel. The problem is it flew up there and ran out of gas, and it fell into the Gaza Strip. It didn't even make it to Israel. And when it fell, it killed a 14-year-old Palestinian boy. And typical of how Hamas just continues to do harm to their own people. They've also done harm to the hostages, and it's very clear that the hostages are being severely mistreated. In fact, we have reports of some of the women hostages that they said they were forced to witness and view videos of Israeli men being tortured and mistreated, and they were forced to see that. There's even one report of one female hostage that they placed her down in the rubble, covered her with a bunch of dust, and took a video of it so that they go around saying, well, she was killed in an Israeli airstrike. So what the Hamas people are doing is nothing but sheer evil, and it's no question they must be eliminated. Anybody deciding to treat Hamas like they're equally equivalent to other people is wrong. Hamas has demonstrated and gone far beyond the line of human behavior. So here's Trump's plan for Gaza. We've been hearing about that. He wants to move the Palestinians out, rebuild it. Some people are talking about maybe turning the Gaza Strip into this wonderful tourist spot, big hotels, you know, the Riviera of the Mediterranean, and so forth. And while that's getting a lot of attention, everybody's justifying it by saying, well, here's Trump thinking outside the box. The reality is that the one actual thing being discussed is allowing Palestinians to be able to escape Gaza. Now, to get out, that's where it gets interesting. Israel is actually preparing for the possibility that certain Palestinians could be bused over to the Ramon Airport, which is near Eilat, and fly them to other places, or bus them up to Ashdod, which is a port just north of Gaza, and for them to be able to leave on a ship or a boat to go other locations. Right now, Egypt doesn't want anybody crossing the border, and so there's a big dilemma as to how in the world would you move all these people and get them out of there to begin with. This week, King Abdullah of Jordan did come and visit the president, and I'm certain that they were talking about this plan. At the first press conference there in the Oval Office, Joaquim Abdullah said, I come with good news. I'm willing to accept some 2,000 children that need medical attention. I'll take them right over to Jordan and help them out. Trump said, that's wonderful news. Glad to hear it. I want to talk to you about more. And then Abdullah, in private discussion, said, no, that's it. We ain't accepting any of them. Egypt's Sisi was also invited to come to the White House this week. He refused to come, and he said, the reason why I don't need to come is because my answer is no, I'm not going to be accepting Palestinians back into Egypt. Let me go ahead and explain Egypt's situation a little bit. If you'll recall, several years ago, Sisi, who used to be a general, had to carry out a military coup in Egypt to remove the Muslim Brotherhood president who had been elected. The Muslim Brotherhood is the one that was stirring up the Arab Spring that was going on many years ago. And Hamas is the military wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. So Egypt has already said no to the Muslim Brotherhood. And so you can understand he's going to say no to the military wing of the Muslim Brotherhood as well. But Sisi has also got another problem. And that is because the Houthis down in Yemen have choked off ship travel from the Red Sea into the Gulf of Aden, and specifically slowed down ship traffic going through the Suez Canal. This has hurt Egyptian revenue dramatically, and Egypt relies on a lot of that revenue of world ship traffic going through the Suez. So he's motivated to try to find some kind of a solution. So in these conflicts, Trump is looking at all of the elements of every player and what do they need, what's their strengths, what their weaknesses. And it's very clear that Trump understands that Egypt needs to find a way, get the Houthis stopped, and find some way to cooperate with Trump. So more to come on that as we go further. The nature of the conflict, let's get back to what are we really dealing with here. Bottom line. Israel wants to live as a free nation and not be threatened by any of its neighbors. Hamas, that organization, wants all of Israel and all the Jews dead, and they are willing to kill themselves if they think they can kill Israel first. So those are the bottom line on what we're facing here. And it's a consternation and a conflict that seems almost impossible to deal with. I want to share with you a couple of verses from the prophet Zechariah because he speaks to exactly what we're seeing here today. Zechariah 12, verse 1 says, "The pronouncement of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. The Lord who stretches out the heaven, lays out the foundations of the earth, and forms the spirit of a person with him in, declares, Behold, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes staggering to all the peoples around. And when the siege is against Jerusalem, it will also be against Judah. It will come about on that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will injure themselves severely. And all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it." We have the attention of the entire world paying attention to what's going on with Israel and their enemies. And guess what is happening? Anybody that comes over and messes with Jerusalem and messes with the people of Judah, that's the Jewish people, that's the land of Israel today, it says that by dealing with that, getting into it, it's like they're drinking from a cup that makes them drunk. And they are going to fall down and they're not going to accomplish what they want to do. I would caution the president to be very careful about that. You don't do anything that is actually deemed as being against Jerusalem according to the God of Israel. That as the promise was made to Abraham, I will bless those that bless thee, I will curse those that curse thee. Obviously, the enemies of Israel are cursing Israel and they're paying the price for it, and we're witnessing it today. Jerusalem continues to be the center of attention of conflict in the world. It's called the center of the world, and here we are. Now, the IDF, I said to you, is drawing up new plans for offensive operations in Gaza. This ceasefire that we're doing in the first phase, it's not looking promising that the second phase will happen. And in fact, the ceasefire is so delicate at this moment, if from week to week and day to day, the ceasefire could completely go away. That's how erratic Hamas is at this point. If that be so, then that means that we're going to be Gaza's going to have to be dealt with in urban warfare. I need to give a little more explanation about what that is. Urban warfare is the worst kind of warfare for a military organization to have to deal with. The best way to do it is you move all the civilians out, then you root out the enemy, securing the ground but not losing ground, and it's all a lot of guerrilla warfare. Hamas is using hostages as shields. And they have that ground in there and that rubble that they're doing. Let me share just a little bit more about a little commentary on if you're going to go into urban warfare, this is what Israel is facing. Number one, an urban defender clearly has the advantage. He knows the ground and the terrain, and Israel has to go in there block by block, house by house, and they're the ones that know where the enemy is at. Israel doesn't know where they're at. Urban terrain reduces the attacker's advantage when it comes to intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, the utility of aerial assets, and the attacker's ability to engage at a distance. Now, we've seen Israel go in with their air force and use it about as much as they possibly can. Maybe some other drones can still go in there. But getting the intel and exactly where they're at is extremely difficult. And as a result, the excellent weapons that fire at range and keep the Israeli forces back safe, they can't use those because you have to be in such close quarters with the enemy. The defender can see and engage the attacker coming because the attacker has limited cover and concealment. When you stage a couple of terrorists in one of the pieces of these buildings, say in the upper floor of a bombed out building, they can see you coming, you don't see them. And you only find out about them after they decided to open fire on you, and then you have to deal with that because you don't have good cover at the moment they shoot at you, but they have excellent cover for where they are at. The buildings serve as fortified bunkers that must be negotiated. All that rubble that's going on, all that concrete and rebar that's sitting around, it's like a perfect bunker. It's a perfect defensive position for small squad warfare and soldiers that are on the ground. you're trying to over, Israel is trying to get past that rubble and get to where Hamas is at. Hamas gets to use all the rubble to their benefit. Attackers must use explosive force to penetrate buildings. There's no doors on this stuff anymore. If you're going to get through a wall and so forth, Israel has to blow a hole through it, whereas Hamas knows exactly the right paths and they've made escape routes and so forth in this. It's a nightmare and it's a maze to be able to go in and try to find the enemy and so forth. The defender maintains relative freedom of maneuver within the urban terrain. Hamas has been operating in and around that rubble and terrain. They don't come out in the open. They use their tunnels to go from place to place. And when they've set up where they can be in one building and they put a hole through it and then so they can escape into another building that's completely separate. You thought they were in this building, but they escaped into a whole other building you didn't know they had access to, but they know they have access to. So basically what they can do is they can shoot at you. And if they don't stay there and keep engaging, they can escape, you know, out very easily. The underground serves as the defender's refuge. All those tunnels that Gaza has been built, Hamas can simply go underground, and there they get food, they get additional ammo, they can rest, and they can stay right in the immediate area. Whereas the ground troops up on top, like the Israelis coming in, they got to set up a base camp later on and pull back from there and so forth. Hamas can stay right there in that area. The Israeli forces have to go in and out of the area. And that causes additional danger to the IDF. And finally, neither the attacker nor the defender can concentrate their forces against each other. Urban warfare is really fought at the squad level. You have a squad of maybe 4 or 5 men, maybe 8 at the most. And if you have any more than that, you're going to start taking casualties because the ground and the trains supports a couple of guys going in. The Hamas terrorists will operate with 2 or 3 men. They'll get in a particular building, and one guy will shoot, and then the others will move away, and they'll set up booby traps and so forth. But the Israelis, to be able to get in there, they have to make contact with them and deal with a small engagement fight first. You can't bring a whole great big element of Israelis in and just sweep through the whole thing. All you'll do is take a lot of casualties, and IDF is trying to do that without getting their guys killed. To date, the IDF has lost nearly 900 of their soldiers in this combat, many of them down there in Gaza, being shot by rushing in too quickly, running into booby traps, accidents that happen by bringing military forces in and equipment. And even if you bring mechanized forces in where you got guys in tanks and APCs, armored personnel carriers, and so forth, those can be attacked by small squads, and you can lose a lot of guys doing that. So it is extremely difficult for the Israelis to fight this urban warfare. So when it talks about Israel coming up with new options for the military, I'm not quite sure what those options are. They're not revealing them yet. But one of the things that they have to do is they have to solve this urban warfare problem. It's a military science problem that has to be solved. And throughout history, where we've seen urban warfare, either in the Gulf Wars or in other nations that are fighting it, some techniques seem to work, others don't. It appears that Hamas has learned lots of lessons from all of those previous conflicts, has employed every technique they could to cause their battle with Israel to be as maintained as long as they possibly can. Now, if we step back and what has essentially happened in the last 3 weeks, there's been a gigantic shift. And we mentioned this to you earlier. As a result of President Trump, he's come in and on 3 major categories is now helping Israel. 1, there is no question that international diplomacy, the U.S. is going to support Israel. Coming against the ICC with sanctions against the prosecutors that are trying to arrest Netanyahu and other military officers. And dealing with the U.N., any resolution that comes up in the U.N., the U.S. will put it down in the Security Council. The U.S. has also supplied ammunition. Now, we heard about Biden, who delayed the 2,000-pound bombs, refused to give those to Israel. Well, it turns out that that's not all that was happening. There was all kinds of other ammunition. Small arms ammunition was being delayed and slow to delivery. Trump has built a fire under that, and they have moved all of that stuff to Israel. And as I announced to you last week, moved also some 1,000-pound bombs, which gives the IDF a whole new level of dimension for carrying out airstrikes, and additional combat bulldozers for the work that they need to do there. Plus, the U.S. has put an ambassador to Israel in, who is very pro-Israel and believes in the Bible. And that will change dramatically the approach of the U.S. administration toward dealing with Israel, recognizing it is the promised homeland for the Jewish people from God, the God of Israel, that goes all the way back to Abraham. So that's very important in terms of setting a historical context for any negotiations with Israel in the future. So what has that done to the Oslo Accords? You know, the Oslo Accords that were put together by Clinton, Rabin, and Arafat way back in 1993, if you remember the famous handshake they did there on the White House lawn. The Oslo Accords are essentially dead. There is no, quote, Palestinian homeland that is in that land. That all of that ground is the original homeland of the people of Israel. So recently, the president was asked about that two-state solution and about that, and he said, well, we'll be talking about that. You'll hear more about that soon. I think it's very clear at this point that the U.S. is now shifting toward the Oslo Accords are dead. And by the way, Gaza was a Palestinian state, and they failed. So what makes us think giving the Palestinians a Palestinian state with another piece of terrain that they're going to be successful? Obviously, there's no one who believes the Palestinians can manage themselves and take care of it, because they are hell-bent on destroying Israel instead of taking care of their own people or building a nation of their own. Israel has been responding to this new initiative on the part of the Americans, and recently has moved Israelis into key positions in coordinating with the United States. And oh, by the way, every one of them are American-born. So the Israelis with American-born are now operating in all of the negotiations so that there'll be no misunderstandings and everyone will understand here in the United States as well in Israel as to what's being put together. In particular, we should take note of that there's a certain lady that used to be at the JNS, and her name is Carolyn Glick. She's now been pulled out as a commentator on what was going on in the Middle East, is now a direct aide to Benjamin Netanyahu to help understand and deal with the Americans. I've listened to her commentary for some time. In fact, used some of her commentary in the course of my Messianic World Update analysis. And needless to say, her point of view is brilliant, well thought out, and very strategic. And she's now a counselor to Netanyahu and working with the U.S. That shows you the commitment on the part of Israel to also work with the Trump administration in future understandings with the United States. Inside of Israel and Samaria, the IDF is still carrying out military operations against the Palestinian cities that are harboring terrorists. To date, some 200 terrorists have been arrested. Some 60 have been killed, and the operation is still continuing on to this day. In fact, additional IDF forces have been applied to the task there in those cities. The U.S. position toward Iran is getting a little bit weird. Trump came in and announced maximum sanctions, maximum pressure, and insisted that Iran cannot have nuclear weapons, and they won't have them, and basically is going to choke them off on their oil sales and get them back to where it was before when he was the president the first time. And we heard last week that there's rumblings within Iran that, first of all, Khomeini said, I don't want to make a deal with him. I'm not willing to talk to the Americans. And then the other subject was the Republican Guard was advising Khomeini, we need to build some kind of a nuclear weapon. Even if it's a crude weapon, we need to build at least something and say we have a nuclear weapon and use it for deterrence. And in the midst of all of this going on, Trump this week, and apparently off the cuff with the press, he said, really, I want to make a deal with Iran. You know, they won't get nukes, but I want to make a deal so they'll be prosper and do fine. So all of a sudden, he's speaking in very positive terms for it. That's very concerning to Israel because Israel's position is that Iran clearly is a threat to the region and the whole world. And they, too, agree with the U.S. We cannot permit Iran to have nuclear weapons. It's a threat directly to Israel. And they came over and had a conversation with Trump this last week in which it was put forward where Israel said, we better hit Iran very soon now while they have no ability to defend themselves. In particular, we need to take out two of those nuclear sites, Natanz and Fordo, which is in Iran. Those are the key sites that they're using for their nuclear weapons program. As I said to you, Iran doesn't want to talk to anybody. And when they heard the rumblings of what Israel is interested in doing, and that is discussions with the U.S. about it, why they announced you wouldn't dare hit us. And like that's some kind of a great threat. I'm not sure what Iran thinks they can do to stop it, because quite honestly, at this point, they have no air defense system and they are at the mercy of the Israeli Air Force and whatever weapons they have. By the way, there is a rumor that as a part of the discussion with Trump, that Trump may also be authorizing one other weapon to be given to Israel, and that is the big U.S. Bunker busters. The bunker busters that Israel has at the moment can go about 20 feet deep and then sets off a bomb. That goes underground, blows off. But the bunker busters that the U.S. has, they go 200 feet when they go off. Those are the real bunker busters. And there are many of the analysts that say that's the weapon that needs to be take out the Iranian sites. So either we get the U.S. to do that part, Israel does the other, or we give the weapons to Israel and they go and do it. Whatever it is, that's the level of discussion that's going on right now with regard to Israel wanting to take advantage of the moment and the time, not let the time slip by and allow Iran to regroup and be able to build a new defense. President Trump, also to the shock and surprise of everybody, in the midst of the King of Jordan coming, just finishing up with Israel, all the news that's going on, he announced that he'd been on the phone with Vladimir Putin for more than an hour, and then talked to Zelensky. And all of a sudden, we're going to put together some kind of a peace deal here next week. The representatives are going to go over, and we're going to talk about ending the Ukraine and Russia war, some kind of settlement that is supposed to come out of that. If you recall, Trump made the boast that as soon as he comes in, he can solve that war very quickly, and apparently he's making good on his claim, although to the shock of everybody, we'll see what happens with regard to that. We need to continue to pray for Israel in the Middle East, particularly for the remaining hostages. And I'm telling you, the ceasefire is very shaky at the moment. We're watching it from week to week to see how it goes. Pray for our nation and for President Trump and all of the things that are taking place. And by the way, he is moving at lightning speed, making changes not only for our nation, but for the rest of the world. Thank you for viewing this program. We very much appreciate your participation with us. Search Lion and Lamb Ministries on your favorite podcast platform. Find all of our five different current series that we have up. I think you'll find those programs to be very interesting. And I just want to mention again, we're very thankful for the organization called Good Pods that came out and sent us a letter and said that we had debuted at number 50 for podcasts in the Judaism category. We're grateful for that, and we're hopeful that our podcast will go out and be an encouragement to many. I shared with you last week, and again, I want to share with you again, Yavo is published as a magazine once a month by Lion and Lamb Ministries. informative teaching articles about the faith. It's a free subscription. Go to our webpage and you can sign up and get a free Yahvo. Shabbat Shalom to all of you.